You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
Yes, and Mike Brennan.
Hey,
still.
I don't know why. I was about to bust into a George Kell impersonation.
Yeah.
Good afternoon, Paul Carey.
Yeah.
All right. Well, those are the days.
It was.
Yep. We were talking back in the day a minute ago. That was the day.
That was the day.
I think
different
you're right.
Day, but
yep. We've got a great show for you today. A lot of interesting guests, including we're going to wrap the show up with a call from Michigan's Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist. For right now, we're going to start the show with a. I should say, I guess, a longtime friend of the show.
Yeah,
and someone
be
who's been on a
that.
Few times. Yeah, yeah. You got to stay away from the O word.
Right.
Yeah. So, but it's Lisa Diggs, and she's from BuyMichiganNow.com, which is one of the great institutions here in this state in terms of boosting the Michigan economy. And you've got an actual physical event coming up this very weekend, right?
We do. The Buy Michigan Now Festival in our 11th year in downtown Northville, August 2nd through 4th.
Wow. Okay. So each year gets bigger and better. I mean, how many roughly, well, you probably know, how many exhibitors do you have this year, roughly?
Over 150, somewhere between 150 and 160.
Mm. Is that bigger than the previous year, or is it growing?
It does grow. I mean, I think back, we were talking, here's back in the day again.
Back in the day.
We started, it was about a half a block. It was also 7 days long, which was crazy.
Seven days long.
Yeah, the first year.
That's a long time to buy stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
I think a weekend is
long time to man a booth.
Originally happened was, you know, each year we asked the governor to proclaim Buy Michigan Week. So happy Buy Michigan Week! It starts today.
Mm. Yep.
And so in that particular year, then we had 5 weeks between getting the proclamation the first time ever and doing this festival.
Mm-hmm.
And Northville had sort of a standing event that happened on Friday and said, "Can you add Friday?" Then they have a standing event on Tuesday. Can you add Tuesday? Well, then it was like, well, I guess we need something on Wednesday and Thursday. Next thing you knew, we had a 7-day event. So it's much better as a 3-day.
And it starts on Friday, right?
It starts on Friday at 4 p.m. Beverage Garden opens at 5 p.m.
Oh.
Now, what kind of beverages are we talking?
Mm-hmm. There might be some Michigan craft brews on hand.
Okay.
Some very delightful Michigan wines. And great flavors from our official pop of the festival, Faygo.
Of course.
Yep.
Faygo.
Nothing Red says Bob. Michigan more than Faygo.
Yep.
Yep.
So, but also you do have a website, and that's part of what goes on there is it's sort of like the eBay for folks in Michigan, right? Something like that?
Yeah. Well, so we have a website, buymichigannow.com, that businesses, not just businesses that would be represented at the festival, but any kind of business can join the campaign and be found in our directory there. And then for the festival, we have a different website, Buy Michigan Now Fest, as in FEST.com, where people can find the specific information related to the festival.
And over these 3 days, how many folks do you typically draw? I know you don't do an official headcount, but what's a good estimate?
Somewhere in the range of 30,000.
Oh, that many.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really great. It's a great family event. We have a kid zone and some fun stuff. There's a company that's new to Northville called STEMville, and they've created a play shop that is all STEM-based children's activities. And so they're actually the sponsor of our kid zone this year. So they're going to be doing some really cool things that we've never done before in the kid zone. And then there's always fun games and other things, face painting and some of the typical kid zone stuff that will be happening. Live entertainment all weekend long in Town Square from only, of course, talented Michigan folks. And then the vendor booths and the restaurants of Northville are phenomenal as well. So,
Matthew,
all right, let's have a sort of a sampling of some of the vendors that are going to be there. I'm looking at a list here online right now. What do you have that's sort of new and interesting this year?
Well, I mean, it's funny when you say sampling because one of the my favorite things to do, and probably everybody's favorite thing to do, is sample foods. There's a chance to try all kinds of things. And one of the great things about this event is if you try the product there, you can not only buy it there, but you can go start asking your grocer to start carrying it if they don't already. And that's what helps take these businesses to another level when they're hiring people. So you can try everything from gourmet individual cheesecakes in a variety of flavors to hot sauce and salsa to sausages that are made in Michigan, all kinds of different things that you can actually taste and buy there, pasties that you can get and take home. And then one of the products I think is really interesting this year is there's a company making child safety products to, you know, cover your outlets and those kinds of things. And something that normally, sadly, is bought, like shipped in from China or somewhere, but they're actually making them here in Michigan. So I'm excited to meet them.
Let's go back to the STEM stuff. You were saying this is all brand new STEM stuff for kids. Like, give us a for instance, what kind of STEM stuff?
Well, they're in their space that they have, which people will get a chance to tour, there's all kinds of things that they do. During our festival, they're going to be helping kids put together a magnetic roller coaster, which I think is really interesting. And some other things I'm excited to find out myself because I haven't seen it yet. So they're going to be building stuff on the spot.
I notice you've also got some service providers there. I see a metal roofing company.
And the roofing is made in Michigan. Some of the service providers, listen, if you're thinking about doing something to your home, this is also a great way to do it because you come out to the event, you have a good time. You can stop in a no pressure environment and ask some questions and leave them information or not leave them information so you don't have to worry about the callbacks depending upon how interested you really are. So it's a great way to do that. And there are people providing all kinds of home services. There's a lot of great home furnishings. If you're looking for anything from candles to signs to small handcrafted pieces of furniture, all of that will be out there. Some stuff for the outdoors. There's some metal artists that have great garden art. All kinds of really cool stuff.
Go ahead.
And parking? Now, I know the racetrack is getting ready to close, so do people park down there? Because that's a big parking lot.
Yeah, they do still park down there. There's parking in lots all around town. I should say that one of the things that differentiates this event, not only were we the first event that was promoting Michigan-made products, but we always keep it no entrance fee and no parking fees because we want people to actually spend money with these vendors because that's what this event is all about. So it's free to get in. It's free to park. There's parking lots around all around town. And then if it gets full, you can go down the hill. There's a couple lots, as you mentioned, by the race course and across from the race course where the farmer's market usually is. And there's also street parking in Northville. So lots of places to park.
Tell us a little bit about the genesis of Buy Michigan Now. What did you do before championing this website and sort of how you got the idea to do it?
Well, I'm a consultant by trade. And so back in 2007, when we first launched the campaign, I was traveling around the country as most of my business was outside the state of Michigan. And every time I came home, somebody else had lost a home or a business that I loved closed, and you start thinking, what are we going to do? How do we do something about it? We were in it so much worse than the rest of the country, so much faster. So I happened to go to South Africa, and while I was there, I noticed that we were in an area called Soweto, which is where they force people of color to move in. It's still a very challenging area where people live. And as we got out of Soweto toward the end, it's a village of kind of tin huts. There were these small tables set up with people selling things that you may or may not really want to take with you. But we met the first person and talked politely to her about what she had. And then we started to walk away. And she said, wait, before you leave, go see my friend Veronica's store. Her store is a table that's four tables down, right? We went and did that. And very quickly, you got the message that they were saying, we're not asking for a handout. In fact, they told us, you'll see beautiful children. They'll ask you for money. Don't give them any. They need to know that education is the way out, which is remarkable when the message is coming from people who are living in abject poverty.
Yeah.
And they were basically saying, hey, we know that you came here with more than we have. We have things to buy. We're not asking for a handout, but support our businesses. And the fact that they would send you from one person to another, even though that was the direct competition, was the impetus for Buy Michigan Now. As I thought, as long as we go with the local coffee shop or Big B Coffee or a coffee beanery, we're doing better than when we go to one of the national chains and multiply that times every kind of business that we have in the state of Michigan.
What seems to be the most popular items that you've discovered at this event? What are people buying the most besides food or drink?
I would say it is a great place to buy your Michigan Pride. You can find a t-shirt, you can find a sign, you can find a koozie, you can find almost anything that's got a really cool Michigan design on it. And I would say that that is equally, easily the most popular thing that people come to. It is a great place to shop and get gifts for the holidays, never mm-hmm. too early to start, right? And it's a great place to do that. And also, this year we've got an author tent that will have four different Michigan authors all the time signing and selling their books on the spot. So it's another great place for people to come out and get. That's a super cool gift to come and get ahead of time.
Well, we have Richard Steenan in the studio who will be on another segment who has just come out with a book. So he was gesturing there. We got to get him
one
in
one of my
there.
Chopped liver.
Yeah, yeah, right. Slide him in.
We'll have to talk.
You're going to be around this weekend, right?
Okay. It's exciting. It's an interesting range of, we've got everything from a poet to a guy who tracked down one particular deer as his nemesis through the state of Michigan to people coming down. 100 things to do in Michigan or 100 things to do in the Upper Peninsula before you die. That author will be here. All kinds of really cool things to check out. And these authors there's a mystery writer who's, I think he's in his sixth book. And a lot of the fiction books are set somewhere in Michigan, which always makes for a fun read if you're a local.
And in case you're worried that you're not going to get to do all those things in the Upper Peninsula, I see you have a Rise Psychiatric Services here. So you can find out how that makes you feel.
Yeah.
We're actually excited. This is the first time that they've been there. And I think that's, it's a constant battle to remove the stigma of mental illness and mental health challenges. And so I think that's a great opportunity. All jokes aside, it's a great way for them to interact with the community and just say, hey, we're here if you need us or if you know somebody who needs us. I think that's great.
So if somebody is wearing an Ohio State shirt, they would definitely need some kind of psychiatric help, right? So
spoken well, like a true Michigan graduate.
I'm a Spartan, so I might say that about some other things. Green. Yeah. So I gotta be careful.
Okay.
lots of food, varieties of food. I know you're mentioning some of it, but like what?
Yeah, just even if you're there, Ray's Red Hots, which is one of the more famous hot dog joints in Ann Arbor, will be out there. There will be some good barbecue out there. The Bavarian Inn Cluck Truck will be down. So if you can't make it up to Frankenmuth and you've been craving that chicken, come on out and get that at the festival. The Cluck Truck, isn't that a good name?
It's a good one.
I like it.
2 minutes, Dave. Okay.
About five different kinds of hot sauce here from the looks of things, too, looking at the list.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's cool that's one of those places where you can actually taste and compare and figure out which one you really like. Cause there's nothing I hate more than I buy a bottle of something or a jar of something and then I get home and try it and go, okay, that
was not
my thing. Yeah. So here, even some of these companies, an individual company might make four or five different kinds of a salsa and you can try them and say, that one's too hot. This one's perfect for me. Or I like the one with mango that's a little sweeter. Mm-hmm. Somebody makes some with cherries in it. So it's a good chance to try those things out.
Yeah, I noticed a lot of vendors with ties to Northern Michigan as well.
Mm-hmm. So we're excited. I think this event, because we put buy in the title, I think the message comes through that it's not an art fair. You will find art there, but this is not just a come around and browse and walk around.
Yeah, we
event.
Just had
this
that in Ann Arbor 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So.
This well,
it was
come
110
out and,
degrees.
And
right? yeah.
Meet some entrepreneurs, spend some money, and help them. A lot of our entrepreneurs do the event for a few years, and then they manage to open up their own storefront or get in a lot of grocery stores where they move on because they're now hiring more people, and then it makes a slot for somebody else. So this really is about that.
All right, we got to close this segment, so give folks that website address for the fest.
It's buy, B-U-Y, Michigan, now, fest, F-E-S-T, .com.
Okay.
All right, thanks very much, Lisa Diggs of Buy Michigan Now and the Buy Michigan Now Fest. This weekend in downtown Northville, Michigan, it'll be Friday and Saturday and Sunday, starting 4 o'clock Friday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Go there, buy a few things. It'll be fun.
Okay.
All right, we'll be back with another segment of the M-Squared TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Rouse.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening on PodcastDetroit.com.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
It's Mike Brennan.
And Matt Roush.
And you're listening to M Squared TechCast, which is about sort of morphed into MI Tech News TV, but we still have the Foster promos. I'm loath to get rid of those and update, you know, because...
That man, God rest his soul, had a set of pipes. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
The deep baritone.
That dulcet tone, yeah, indeed. Yeah.
So,
well, we're here with another longtime friend of the show.
Not
with,
but she doesn't have a deep baritone.
No, not hardly. it's Temper Shea. She's from InvestDetroit Ventures, and you've got a big event coming up soon, right?
We've got a lot of good stuff to talk about. So, yes, coming up in November, on November 13th, is the Accelerate Michigan Innovation Competition, or AMIC, as we all like to lovingly refer to it. So, we're looking for those entrepreneurs to put their applications in by August 15th.
Yeah, I know there was a deadline coming up, so we need to highlight that. But it's just the application. It's not the actual executive summary.
Yeah, you don't need a business plan yet if you just even think you might want to compete for $1
million. $1
million. $2 million.
Yep. Yes. It's August 15th is the deadline to just register.
It is. And then
it's fairly painless. I looked at the form.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you did. Thank you for your help on that. I appreciate it. So, register to compete by August 15th. And then by August 31st, you're going to need to have all that other information in.
Now, these companies, from my experience covering this thing forever, is these are not startups. They are startups, yes, but they're really phase two where they're doing commercialization. They got something going on versus, gosh, we got this great idea. Let's get some money for it, right?
Well, they're actually very early seed. Mm-hmm. So companies that have been in the ecosystem that are they're past ideation, let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. But they may not have their MVP complete. Mm-hmm. Or you know, have their market.
Well, really they might not have customers yet. They might they not have revenue.
A lot of them definitely don't have customers. A few do. A few have customers on occasion.
Well, gosh, maybe you ought to throw my platform in there, assuming that it gets done by April.
By November.
August. November. Yes.
Yeah, right. That's when the event is. You want to show them something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's going to be great. So we're actually going to be in a really nice venue downtown that's been completely redone. We're going to be at the State Savings Bank. And from what I heard when...
State Savings Bank. Never been there.
Like right downtown. Beautiful. Okay.
What's the address?
That's a good question. I'm going to have to look that up.
I'll look it up right now.
I don't have it.
Okay.
So it's the Campus Martius area around there? Or
I think it's even further downtown. I think it's closer to
Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really? Yeah. Gosh, I never heard of it before. Yeah.
Beautifully redone, as you know, many of the buildings downtown are being done. So another nice space. You know, we were at Lexus Velodrome last year, and it was a lot of fun, but we really like to showcase some of the different things happening.
151 West Fort Street, folks. That is where it is. State Savings Bank historical marker is there.
Before it and what?
I'm going to look at the map. Yeah. it's right by the Guardian building.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, right downtown. So.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
So it's going to be great. So even if you're an entrepreneur who thinks you want to apply, definitely do that by August 15th.
Mm-hmm.
If you're someone who just wants to come see what's happening and network with investors, we have investors coming in from all over the country to help us with this pitch competition. We've got some great judges and lots of opportunities. So even if you're not a company that's going to compete, there's no harm in coming down and networking with other folks and seeing, you know, what kind of opportunities are out there.
Well, even if you throw your idea in the mix, it's going to be viewed by somebody, right?
Absolutely.
And you'll get some feedback like, well, great idea, but, you know, you need to do this, this, and this, which is very valuable.
Yeah, we have teams of judges who actually, I believe, are doing different levels of vetting and teams deciding who's going through. Because we host the competition, we can't really do the judging, too. That would be not really right. So we have a bunch of people who help us do that, which is great. All people in the entrepreneurial ecosystem here.
Right. Well, we got a bunch of those.
Well, and that's, you know, that to me is the great value of these things. I mean, there are some cool companies that come out of them. There are some cool companies that win prizes. But really just getting everybody together. You know, it's a big part of this.
It really is. It's super beneficial. And there are people who come in from the coast and other parts of the country who don't necessarily know what's going on in the ecosystem here. So it's really enlightening to them. And it'll be, you know, in November. So Detroit Homecoming will have happened. We already will have done, you know, a couple other big things this year.
And you're guaranteeing it'll be excellent weather, right?
I sure hope so.
It's too early for snow.
Was it November? What's the day again?
November 13th.
It's sort of in that danger zone, you know?
It could be very shaky.
Yeah.
It was cold last year, but it was nice and sunny.
It was dry. Okay.
It was good.
All right. Gotcha. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
All right. So this is for more than just sort of the typical, when you think of a startup and you think of an app or software algorithms, that kind of thing. You're looking for physical product companies too as well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Last year there were a few companies that had physical products. There was life science, mobility, anything you can think of.
Yeah, mobility is big now. Everybody's getting into mobility. That's our thing here in Detroit. So,
well, there's so many different aspects to it. Right. I mean, in our portfolio, surprisingly, we don't have a lot of mobility.
Really?
We have some, but not a lot. And there's so many different aspects to it. Just being out and about with the Planet M folks, as I'm sure you're familiar. Mm-hmm. So many different things. How everything talks to each other and Internet of Things, like the conference that you host. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all just... Everything's going to touch each other. And I can't wait for autonomous vehicles, honestly, because I could get up north a lot quicker if people would get out of the way.
That's it. You can just sit there. Yeah, you can sit there and get your work done, and the car will do the driving.
Exactly. Doesn't that sound fabulous?
Yeah, yep. But
no surging.
We're still a ways away from that. But
it'll happen on freeways first.
Yeah,
you know, that's the thing. You know, controlled access on ramps and off ramps, and gradual speed increases and decreases, and all that sort of thing.
I think I too
am awfully tired of I-75 between Flint and Standish. I just would be happy never to have to drive that again. Mm-hmm. We'll just let the car do it.
Yeah, I mentioned that I had a family reunion in Boyne City, I think a year ago, and I made the mistake of coming down on Memorial Day Monday because I had to get the kids to the airport, right?
Oh, that's a bad time to come.
And we left at 10 in the morning, and I got my son to the airport at 4:30, and it was just a moving parking lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So...
As it can be.
And frequently
you told me to take 127, so next time that's the way I'll do it.
127 is the way to go.
75, forget it.
Yep.
You know, so anyway.
We digress.
So we've got Hacker Fellows you wanted to talk about too, right?
Yes. So Accelerate Michigan is one of our programs at Invest Detroit Ventures. And the other program that we help the ecosystem a little bit is with Hacker Fellows.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a group of college students, tech folks who are looking to go into startup community but not have to go to the coast. We want to keep them here and the startups that are happening here and be able to compete salary-wise to keep them here and keep them interested in it.
Sure.
So this program is actually, we have some partners that help us fund this program, and we place 15 fellows every year and 10 interns at tech startups within the city and the state.
That's great.
Some in Ann Arbor, some here.
So do you place them, but they also, do they get any kind of funding, or are you just sort of...
Yeah, the program actually helps supplement their salaries to the company so that the company is not having to do that.
So you take care of their internship costs, whatever those might be or whatever.
A portion of it.
Yeah.
To bring them up to a level where they would be if they went outside of the state to work in a startup.
Well, one's dollar does go a little bit farther here in Michigan.
It goes a lot further here than it does in Silicon Valley.
Particularly for housing, right.
I think I told you, Rachel Conrad bought a 3-bedroom house out in the, I can't remember which part of the valley it was, $1.4 million.
Yeah.
So, nuts.
Yeah. And same thing. I was just in New York last week for a summit with a group of other folks who do what I do, who manage portfolio companies for venture capital firms, and it always amazes me. New York is a great city, but I'm starting to feel that vibe here downtown like it was there, and get a lot more for your money than the little teeny hotel that I ended up staying in.
I started my career in New York in 1981, working at a publishing house, Trade Press Publishing House, and that's when it was bottoming out, and they were getting ready to go into bankruptcy. And Manhattan was not a real friendly place.
Times Square was a real dark carnival.
Yes, we all know about Times Square. Yeah, that's the way it was.
Well, it's like a Disney mall now.
So, yeah, well, it's really come a long way.
But it really, when I was there last week, I thought, you know, Midtown Detroit, downtown Detroit really is getting this vibe. It really feels good. So we should all be very proud of what.
Yeah, last time I went down there for an event, I actually had a hard time finding parking, which is a lovely problem to have.
Yeah, that's unusual.
Yeah, I did too. So that's great. So getting these young people here involved, staying here, it's really fantastic. And they've worked for some great companies. So they've been at Duo, they've been at StockX, Nutshell. So what cool places to, you know, start your tech career right out of college.
All right. Yeah.
There's an internship. So we're really proud of that one, too. So helping the ecosystem in any way we can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if I am a young person or no one, how do they apply for this program?
I don't think you're a young person, though.
No.
Yes, he is. So they can go right on the Invest Detroit website.
We're speaking hypothetically.
Yes, right, yes.
What does young mean?
That's it. Yeah. Compared to 95, you're young.
Yeah, right.
Yes, they can go right on our website, investdetroit.com. /venture, ID Ventures, and Hacker Fellows, and the Accelerate Michigan application are there. And also, we'd just love to see the community come out and spend the afternoon with us on November 13th and meet some of these fantastic entrepreneurs.
And see this, what was it called again? The State Bank?
State Savings Bank.
State
downtown.
Savings Bank.
Hmm. It's been completely redone. Just beautiful.
Really?
I've seen a picture.
Huh. Yeah.
Originally was a bank, I'm assuming,
yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely, it was a bank.
Yeah. I just looked at a few pictures online here. It is gorgeous. It's
really?
Very impressive. 73,000 square feet, plus or minus, I think, something like that. And they want to fill it with shops and offices.
That's what I was going to ask, is what are they going to do with it after the event, right?
Yeah.
You
know, yeah, so. Well, it doesn't look like there's any residential in it. It looks like all commercial space.
Okay. Makes sense.
Yep.
So, found another new gem.
We've got Dave, a couple more minutes. So what else we got, Tamper?
So is everybody – I haven't talked about Invest Detroit Ventures in a long time and actually what we do.
Yes. Right,
so yeah, I thought about that as on my win today. So
okay, go ahead.
Thanks so much. So our, the basis of what we do is early seed stage investment for Michigan companies. So across the state, we've got some great investments up in Houghton, a rocket thruster company, which is really fun. And
actually, I think I've interviewed that guy. They've got a big vacuum chamber at Michigan Tech, right?
Yeah, Brad
and,
King.
Yeah, and he's working on an ion thruster.
Yeah,
which is basically a rocket without rocket fuel. It works with magnets. Don't ask me how, but you know, okay.
Very cool. And it's for specifically for there. I've learned a lot about satellites recently. There are large satellites. There are small satellites. And there's what they're calling this medium grade satellite, which is the one that Amazon is sending tens of thousands of up into space. So that's kind of their sweet spot, is that medium size utility. It's not super expensive. It's cost effective.
That's for communications of some kind, right?
Communications
and frequently
drone technology.
Yeah, the life of a satellite like that is not defined by the electronics wearing out. It's that it runs out of propellant, and there's no way to go up there and service it. So they're thinking that with these thrusters, they can make those satellites last a lot longer, driving down the cost. So
makes sense.
That's the idea.
1 minute, I'm getting the sign here.
So you had no idea. So we work with companies around the state that pre-seed, early seed, up through Series A. We do a lot of syndication with other people too. So if you know anybody out there, any entrepreneurs who are looking for funding or just looking, you know, for some help and guidance, that's really important to us too. Even though we can't fund everybody, we do want to make sure that we can help everybody.
Okay, we got about a half a minute left, so hit them with those websites.
Websites. So AMIC. Actually, everything is go to investdetroit.com and then /accelerate Michigan. /ID Ventures or /Hacker Fellows.
Got them all.
Okay. Tamper Shea from Invest Detroit Ventures, ID Ventures, Hacker Fellows, Accelerate Michigan Innovation Competition, all sorts of stuff going on. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
All right. We'll talk to Tamper again soon, I'm sure. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M2 TechCast.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another fun-filled segment of the M Squared TechCast right here at PodcastDetroit.com.
You've heard his voice. You've read his books. Now you can see his face.
This is the man.
This is the man, the legend, Richard Steenen.
Hey, guys. Good to be here.
Hey, yes. Good to have you. So it's time to scare the bejesus out of us again with the latest in cyber threats. So what's been happening in the last month since you were here last?
Well, there have been some things like the City Power Group of Johannesburg in South Africa. Got hit by ransomware.
So yep.
Just like, you know, everybody else is getting hit.
A couple
hit
by Florida
ransomware.
Towns got hit.
Yeah, yep. Florida towns, yep. I think Connecticut, Georgia, Tennessee. So they're targeting communities, but they also targeted this, DTE kind of operation.
Right.
But it turns out that even though it wasn't an attack against the SCADA systems that actually control the power, a whole bunch of people are still out of power because they basically encrypted all the customer data, all the databases, websites, everything. So people can't get to their power company to pay their bills. They have a pay-as-you-go kind of model in South Africa. So everybody's out of power and they can't get it turned back on even though they could pay for it.
Wow.
So lesson learned, you know.
Was it a phishing attack?
It was a standard.
You know, somebody clicked on something they shouldn't.
Somebody clicked on something. And then, of course, the big problem here is one, they're not doing adequate defense against phishing attacks. And two, they're not keeping adequate backup and having the recovery procedures. I mean, it should be a matter of just pushing the button.
Yeah, I mean, and particularly since, municipalities and governments and whatnot, these entities are all being targeted around the world. It seems like now that's sink in that maybe we ought to do something about that, right?
Just go buy some terabyte drives and start backing up your stuff. You know, it's going to take hours, but you can get back online in hours too and not pay the hundreds of thousands of dollars of ransomware.
Extortion. One of those Florida cities refused to pay the $600,000 and instead spent $18 million on new computer systems. And I'm thinking, $600,000, $18 million. But then once you pay it, I mean
– Yeah, if you can get the budget for it, and it's great not to pay these guys because every time you pay them, they get the other people get the idea, hey, we can make a lot of money doing this. So, yeah.
Well, especially since backup is so painless these days. I mean, we've got Google Drive at Lawrence Tech where I work, and it takes 2 seconds. You know, you just got to click a couple things, and you're backed up. I try to remember to do it once a week. I don't always, but you know.
There are cloud solutions. There's one cool one called Cobalt Iron that will use any network attached storage on your system and cloud systems, and doesn't care where they are. You have one panel, and it'll split up the files, put them everywhere, and it just takes care of it for you.
Huh.
It's the way to go.
And then once again, you've been filling your Facebook page with all these places that you've been. I'm very envious. Where's Richard today? You know, so you were on a book tour. Let's talk a little bit about your book.
Yeah, at first I got invited to speak at the RSA conference in Singapore. So it's their Asia Japan conference.
Long trip.
Direct flight from here to Tokyo and then from there to Singapore on Delta. So that was kind of nice. 12-hour flight to Tokyo.
Scored some points on that one, huh?
I did.
Yeah.
And after the RSA conference, and I did a mini book tour of a dinner event in Singapore and then on to Kuala Lumpur, which I'd never spoken at before.
Hmm.
And I didn't know this, but in Malaysia, there's a whole city built right outside of KL called Cyber Jaya. And so the cyber center, I guess, that probably means. And it was named that in 1997. So they were like way ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
But now we were in the new office building of the headquarters of the Cybersecurity Malaysia, which is kind of a national group responsible for security in Malaysia. And they've got a big event coming up in September. And they invited me back to speak at that. So I might be heading back.
Wow.
For more of that great food and Malaysian coffee, which is amazing.
Is it? Never had it.
Yeah. So you just mix condensed milk with your coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So it's super sweet. Tastes like chocolate ice cream to me.
Wow. Keep that in mind, you know.
Then I popped over to a new city for me, Manila, which was gorgeous. It was just, modern and it just looked really amazing and it was quite warm. But I got a little nervous when I went out to go to the mall across the street to find a cash machine and saw all the guards walking around with big 12-gauge shotguns. And that's always my red flag that I'm not in the safest area.
Yes.
That reminded me of Joburg, reminded me of Mexico City. And of course, Manila is kind of a troubled place right now. But great turnout in the hotel conference. About 100 people showed up to hear about cloud digital transformation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what my book is, Secure Cloud Transformation. And it's all about this journey to the cloud that most organizations are taking.
Mm-hmm. How are book sales going?
Sold 12,000 copies so far.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, so it's going extremely well, and people are reading it. So people come up to me and say, "Hey, I read your book," which is kind of cool.
Was it a couple hundred pages, I assume? Or? I don't have a copy.
The book is actually 400 pages.
400 pages.
I got one in the car. I'll give it to you.
Oh, how nice. All right.
It includes stories. I've never done this before. I was kind of, you know, thinking of you as I was interviewing people because I was doing actual interviews with 16 CIOs around the world for Siemens and Fannie Mae and Pulte Homes and Kelly Services here in town. And then I just, you know, edited their stories and published them as, you know, their journey in their words.
Mm-hmm.
So even if people don't really want to read all the things I write about what's going on out there, they definitely want to read these stories because these are real people who've done it.
Solving real issues.
Real issues and moving. There's one cool company called NOV, which is an oil well drilling hardware company. They transitioned to the cloud after the financial crisis and oil prices dropped dramatically. And they did the transition to save money. So they moved to Office 365. And, of course, in the process of doing that move, which everybody's doing, it's a huge, huge transition in IT right now. They discover that their network can't handle all the traffic because it has to be tromboned, you know, from remote office or the Starbucks you're in over a VPN back to the central office and you're on the corporate network and then you send them out to Microsoft.
Right.
And Office 365 is really, really chatty. I call it the killer app because it kills your network. So it's moving to something that I worked on in 1993 when I started RustNet, which is called Local Internet Breakout. The idea is all your remote offices should just go to the internet. You know, broadband connections cost a couple $100 a month and just get one of those. Now they're on the network.
Right.
And then you just have to figure out how to protect them as they do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the book's about.
Ah.
How do you protect them while they do that?
Yeah, you send them to essentially a big cloud proxy. And so instead of having all your proxy servers in your data center, then you have to backhaul them through.
Right.
You just send them to a service. And in all cases, this was a company called Zscaler that was providing this service. They went public last March, so a year ago March. And they basically do all the filtering and block, you know, employees going to inappropriate websites. And then they'll do all the anti-malware, DLP. They'll break the encryption so they can see inside the packets and then re-encrypt. So it's kind of replacing VPNs. And it's all this user-defined perimeter, software-defined networking, all that stuff.
So sort of it puts it on hold while it inspects it before it delivers it, something like that?
Yeah, it inspects it real-time. Unless
it can
choose.
It can do that quickly enough that users won't notice a difference.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, everyone I talked to saw improved performance because Zscaler has built out 100 data centers. So they're kind of a reverse CDN. So they built out a big edge.
Mm-hmm.
You connect to the nearest node, and then they get you into Microsoft and Salesforce.com and Google and Amazon faster than if you want your regular route through your regular ISP.
Interesting.
It's very cool. So they all report better user performance. And Office 365 actually works. Microsoft even on their website says if you're using Office 365, you should really sign up for Microsoft Express Route, which is simply a kind of a peering relationship with Microsoft. But then they had to go back and edit that page and say, or Zscaler, because Zscaler essentially does the same thing because they're on Express Route.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. What else is going on out there? We got about 5 minutes left here.
Well, you might have heard about the Equifax breach
a
year and a half ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Federal Trade Commission slapped them with what could end up being a $700 million fine.
Mm-hmm.
So they're already rolling out a website you can go to, and I highly recommend everybody do it. You can go right to the homepage of FTC.gov to find it. And that's the only way to make sure you're not being phished again. So go to FTC.gov, follow the link. And then you just put in last six digits of your social security number and your name, and they'll tell you if you were part of the breach. And if you were, you can ask for $125, and they'll send you a check.
Well, the kicker, though, is that you've got to already have the security monitoring going on. I didn't buy that, so I just said, give me the 6 years of free security monitoring or whatever it was. You know, because what is that? That's like, what do they charge for that these days?
Identity theft protection? Yeah, what is that? I don't know.
It's crazy, but if you've been breached, you probably have had offers in the past. I'm still covered under LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to claim that my subscription to Credit Karma, which is actually free, is equivalent because Credit Karma sends me an alert whenever somebody checks my
credit. I should have gone for the 125, right? You know, so.
Well, I get it free through work. I think a lot of places offer it as a benefit now to employees. Yep. So, yeah. Dave?
So, but here's the real question.
Your mic's not on.
The voice of Dave Phillips here.
They know all of the numbers that were breached because they have a database you can check it against.
Right.
Why don't they just send you the check? The $125.
Exactly. Good question. Because the percentage of people who actually fill that out, it's going to be minuscule compared to the number that were breached, right?
Yeah. You want to make this an effective smack across the back of the head? Yeah. That's how you make it an effective smack across the back of the head.
Totally. I agree with that. And then they also, if you have spent any money or lost anything fighting some sort of identity theft post-breach, they'll compensate you for that as well.
Yeah, but you got to document that.
Right.
Save your receipts, people. Save your receipts.
Yeah, I spent $10,000. Oh, yeah. Okay. Show me the receipts. Okay. Yeah. Well, maybe I didn't.
Bought a new firewall.
Yeah.
just take any of your security investments, you know, your antivirus subscription, everything else.
Oh, and yeah. I thought of that. What an idiot. I mean, I filled out for the form to get the free service, and I could have gone for the dough. Right?
Go back with your other identity. Use that one.
Another identity, yes.
Well, we all seem to have about five emails now.
Yeah.
Your other social security number.
So we were talking before we went on air about the new documentary, The Great Hack. And you haven't seen it yet either, but you're probably looking forward to it.
Yeah, now it's on the top of my list because I've heard a lot of people recommend it highly.
Yeah.
I saw it about a week ago.
Yep. So it gets into the Analytica. Cambridge
Analytica. Pretty scary. I didn't realize they had that level of sophistication. Dave, you can weigh in. I know you saw it because I saw his Facebook feed was this morning, and you were freaking out going, oh, my God.
Well, not even so much a freak out, but, I mean, it's having it laid out that clearly and plainly what those data aggregators can do. I mean, it literally – so what they did in England with the whole Brexit thing.
Brexit, yeah. They interfered big time.
Literally would be declared warfare, a crime of war, because they did not get the British government's approval to use that on their citizens.
Right.
Yeah, before Brexit and the U.S. election in 2016, they tested it in Indonesia and then a country in Africa. Same thing.
11 others.
11 others, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so they're pretty proven model.
And then one can argue, I know this is a touchy subject, 78,000 votes. How much did they impact the U.S. elections in 2016? Yep. 78,000 votes out of, 150 million casts, that's like a rounding error or something.
Yeah. And it's a combined effects, too. You know, on top of all that going on, there was hacks from Guccifer 2.0. And then the shadow brokers released a very embarrassing trove of hacking tools that they had stolen from the NSA. And then the NSA actually prosecuted some guy, but they ended up not actually saying that he's the guy, and he just got sentenced to 9 years in jail, I think. And he just happened to be an engineer who worked at Booz Allen who was hoarding data foolishly, and then he tweeted to Kaspersky, so they saw that while they were looking at the shadow broker's tweets.
We only got about 30 seconds left. I just got the sign here from Dave, filling in, I believe, for Jessica. Up and Lieutenant Governor's calling in. Yes.
All right.
So real quick, why don't you go ahead and answer them? And then, so if people want to get your book, how do they do that, Richard?
Yeah, just go to Amazon, search on my name, STIENNON, and you'll see all my books there. Search on cloud security, and my book comes up first. Search on cyber war, my cyber war book comes up first.
Uh-oh, did we lose him? Okay. Well, thanks very much, Richard Steenan, and we'll get you back on the show here next month, and you can scare us again on what's going on out there.
Always happy to.
All right.
Well, thanks, Richard. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M-Squared TechCast at PodcastDetroit.com.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launchpad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America.
Stand by.
I'm just going to go ahead and cut it. That was an extra one anyway, so now you should have him on. Let's
do the intro, Matt.
Okay. Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to another segment of the M-Squared TechCast.
And we have calling in from where, I'm not sure, Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist II. How you doing today?
I'm doing great, guys. Good to talk with you.
Thanks for joining us. Next time we get you on, we hope to have the streaming video of you. We've had some technical difficulties in the new studio, but we're getting all that worked out.
If anybody can figure it out, I'm sure y'all can.
So, yes. Well, we have the amazing David Phillips here, who's manning the console today. He's one of the co-owners of the studio, so he was working feverishly over the weekend trying to get all that together. But you know, sometimes technology just doesn't work, right?
Unfortunately, I know that to be true.
Yes. Well, you also today, at least I got it over the weekend, you're going to be a columnist for us on a quarterly basis. And so we posted your first column. And you were talking about sort of the haves and have-nots out there for the Internet. I mean, a lot of people should be having the Internet, and it's very important that they do. But unfortunately, a lot of people don't. Why don't we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, first of all, it's really an honor to be able to contribute on a quarterly basis so that I can build a relationship with your audience and your readers. So I appreciate you creating a space for me to do that. And yes, my first column is about having access to the Internet for everyone, because it is truly important. In order to really fully participate in today's society, everyone needs to have access to the Internet so that we can deal with some of the information inequities, frankly, and opportunity inequities that exist. And this is true for people regardless of where they live in the state of Michigan. This is an issue in cities. This is an issue in rural communities across the state. And so we need to do everything that we can and really take an all-hands-on-deck approach to make sure that we're connecting all of our communities to the Internet and the opportunity that it represents.
Recently, we had someone on the show, about 6 months ago, where she was talking about in the city of Detroit, about 40% of the people in the city of Detroit do not have Internet access. I was amazed. I just never would have thought that.
Well, you have to think about what are the reasons why people don't have Internet access. And it's not simply a matter of build out and infrastructure, which sometimes it gets shortcut into being. There are also questions of affordability and questions of adoption and digital literacy. So the affordability front, having access to high speed Internet, as we define broadband, 25 megabits up, 3 megabits down, that can be quite expensive. We've had some carriers or some Internet service providers who tried to create affordable alternatives, but all those may not necessarily be available in all areas. How you define eligibility for those can be difficult. So we're hoping to work with service providers in the state of Michigan to really go a step further and make sure that more people have access to affordable Internet access. then this question of digital literacy and adoption, about understanding relevance and understanding now once people have access to the internet, once people can afford it and they have it in their homes, now we need to know, what can you do with it? How are their literacy, you know, when it comes to regular reading, how does that apply to their digital skills? What skills do they have? They understand what the internet makes possible for them beyond mere entertainment. Once it becomes relevant to people's lives, then they're more likely to utilize it even further. So these are issues that exist in cities that are also exist in rural communities too, but a lot of times the rural conversation is about the infrastructure build out and making sure that the internet literally can be accessed by people there.
There was an organization that occasionally does press releases and works with communities here in Michigan called Connect Michigan. It's part of Connected Nation out of Washington, D.C. Are you working with them on this?
I think they're definitely part of a broad coalition that's trying to solve this problem. And I'm familiar with the work that they've done here in Michigan and the work that Connected Nation does across the country. And they really have been helpful in terms of really understanding reality. How many people do have access? What level of access do people have? So we can define or determine what areas are currently underserved and how can they be better served and what role we can play to make that happen.
I know in some areas, you know, determining, you know, you talk about the infrastructure build out, determining where that infrastructure is, it can be kind of a sore point with providers, right? They don't want to give up that information because of their competitors.
Yeah, I know that that has been an issue in the past. I'll just say that we're going to be encouraging collaboration, because having the information to understand where potential customers are, I think would be in every business's best interest.
Absolutely. So what, if anything, can the state do to help, particularly in, say, inner city Detroit or in the rural areas? I know there's a lot of efforts going on, but is there anything more that you would like to see the state do?
Well, the first thing that we're going to do is really provide a clear call to action. There has been some previous work done by MCAN in the past, and we want to build on that, which is going in the right direction, and really take it a step further to say that this is going to be a priority for our administration. Connecting our communities to one another and to opportunity is something that we want to do. It's part of how we define infrastructure and investing in infrastructure. So it's our intention to ensure that everyone who wants to be part of the market in Michigan understands how important it is to our administration. And we also want to make sure that those who want to participate in this market have an approach that's focused on a 360-degree internet experience that, again, involves access, involves adoption and literacy, and involves affordability, that we ensure that we are competing aggressively as Michigan-based companies, nonprofits, and partnerships for any and all federal grant opportunities to support these kinds of infrastructure build-outs. We also have now state programs to help point some of those federal dollars in the way, especially towards rural broadband projects. And so we want to make sure that no opportunity is left on the table here in Michigan. This seems to be a moment when nationally there's a broader understanding of the primacy of internet access to the everyday experience. And so we want to make sure that that's understood in Michigan and that businesses, nonprofits, partners all are stepping up to take advantage of that, and they know that the state will be there to support them.
Yeah, I don't know how one could get through school these days without internet access. That has to be a real barrier for kids, right?
There's literally something called the homework gap. Studies have shown that children who have access to the internet in their home literally do better on their homework. And so but there are also other outcomes that are impacted by having internet access. If you have access to high-speed internet, you are better able to manage chronic diseases, especially if you don't live near specialized service providers. So think of the people in Michigan who are living with ALS, who are living with diabetes, how they could get access to services and information through telemedicine. Think about the types of programs and services that could be offered in innovative ways when it comes to helping people with different challenges with their mental health. If they could talk to people, if they could video chat people and have access to those kind of services and supports online. We can make our overall quality of life outcomes in Michigan increase if everyone has access to the internet. That's why it's an important part of any conversation about infrastructure.
In your column, you talk about how it might be, or it is important to have more than one provider, because unfortunately, in some areas, that's all we have. There is really no choice. You're stuck with, we won't name them, but some of the big boys, yes? What do we do to foster that competition? How do you bring in an alternative?
Well, certainly having competitive markets is going to be important, and ultimately We believe it can be better for consumers to have those sorts of options. And so, again, we want to make sure that people who may not have been classical or incumbent players in the internet service providing market, but have ideas or have innovative models, understand that they have an opportunity to participate in these markets, understand that there are programs and on-ramps to this market that they should take advantage of. For example, the U.S. Department of Agriculture has a program called the Michigan Reconnect Program, and our administration has offered a letter of support to a number of applicants for those dollars, which is about $200 million available in federal loans and or grant money. And those are available not just to existing internet service providers, but nonprofits and partnerships and utilities can apply for that funding from the federal government to try to pilot or to jumpstart new models of providing internet service. We want to see innovation in this market in the state of Michigan. And we believe that, you know, once there's a challenge that is clearly defined and clearly understood, that leaders and thinkers and doers in the state of Michigan have the wherewithal to step up and solve these problems in ways that can become a model for the country.
In the old days of cable television, cable TV providers negotiated franchises with individual local units of government. Some time ago, the state sort of took over that function, and those providers now sign a single statewide franchise agreement. Is there any talk of any reform on that level with the state's franchising law for cable TV providers who are also the biggest broadband providers?
Well, I think that there's the relationship between cable and internet access is, again, inherent around sort of how existing business models have worked. I think we want to say that that certainly can still happen, but I'm really focused on and excited about what new models of delivery look like. And so there probably will be ways to deliver internet access in Michigan that have nothing to do with those existing or incumbent franchise relationships, and I don't think they are a necessity for success in business going forward. So we're looking to really, I think, expand what's possible in terms of providing internet access in Michigan. There's more than one way to connect the community.
So you're talking about wireless then, or?
I think everything's on the table. We can talk about wireless as far as how it can possibly expand access in new areas. I mean, there are some questions around distance. There's questions around the characteristics of terrain. But if we're going to talk about a conversation with 5G, we have an honest conversation about the fact that I don't really consider that to be a question of expanding access, but to deepening the quality of access in places where there's already density. So, yeah, there's conversations to be had about different standards. We can look at how we can better utilize educational broadband spectrum to expand access to the internet, especially in rural communities. We have so many educational and religious institutions that have this spectrum as an asset, and we can challenge them to use it for public good because that's what that spectrum is about. The FCC has regulated it for that reason in that way. So there are a lot of opportunities here that exist in the state of Michigan, and we want to make sure that everyone is aware of them and is aggressive in trying to take full advantage of them, and again, leaving no opportunity on the table to connect our communities.
Let's talk a little bit about 5G. That's slowly starting to creep in. By the end of the year, we should start to see it in Detroit and some of the other major metro markets. Do you think that's going to really help going forward or not?
Well, I think it helps, again, in terms of the depth and quality of connectivity, which is important when you're starting to think about things like connected infrastructure and autonomous vehicles, ensuring that we have deep and high-quality connections. That will also create the opportunity and for new business models around how data backhaul is going to work for all of these wireless connections. So there is an opportunity, again, to innovate in business models there, and I would love for Michigan and Detroit to be a leader in that. I don't think that 5G is necessarily a solution for rural broadband, so we need to think about what the solution for that problem looks like as well.
Okay, a little over a minute left, Matt.
Okay, so is there, you know, what state body or state agency do these questions of yours fall under? Who's going to be working on this?
Well, it's something that I'm going to be taking the lead on, but really this is an interagency enterprise, right? When we're talking about improving the public health outcomes, obviously DHHS is going to play a role in that. When we're talking about infrastructure build-out, a lot of this, frankly, is going to be connected to the broader infrastructure plan that we have and the primacy of roads and building them and opening them once and fixing them correctly and building them outright. Part of that's going to be an opportunity to lay conduit on these roads that we're fixing. We've seen success with that. So I think you're going to see a lot of different departments involved here. But what's important is that we're all aligned on the goal of connecting our community. So I don't think it's going to matter too much. There shouldn't be a door that will close on you if you want to talk about a conversation around connectivity, regardless of what department you go into, because it will impact life. So what I would say is that people who have ideas about how to better connect communities can just go to Michigan.gov and pick whatever their fancy is, and they'll find someone who's welcome to have a conversation about connection.
Okay. Well, I await to see the commercials that say, fix the damn internet. How about that?
Right. I like that. I like that.
That's pretty clever.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you very much for being with us today, Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist. You're always welcome back anytime. Thanks for being with us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you both.
Okay. Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist, want to thank him for visiting with us today and thank all of our guests here today. Richard Steenan, cybersecurity expert, Tember Shea from Invest Detroit Ventures and the Accelerate Michigan competition and Hacker Fellows and about 19 other things, I think.
A million things.
Yeah, and Lisa Diggs. Once again, folks, a reminder, the Buy Michigan Now Festival is this weekend, August 2nd through the 4th in downtown Northville. So go there and buy some Michigan stuff.
Yep.
Okay, great show today, Mike.
Thank you
for arranging the guests.
Well, we work hard at that all week long,
okay.
You know.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, we'll be back again next Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M-Squared TechCast.
Thanks for listening to M-Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.